Good afternoon, Jenna.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. First of all, happy Valentine's Day. We are recording this on February 14th, 2020.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Thank you very much. So I know we've got a lot to talk about today.
Correct.
And so let's just kick right off into it. So Jenna, I'd love if you'd introduce yourself, where you are in the world, and just a little bit about yourself.
I am Jenna Kingsley. I am in New York City. I am a comedian and a comedy writer and a creator. And apparently I am now, I can add cool person to my list of credentials.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes. I will, I'll send you the Talking to Cool People podcast badge.
Oh, good. Cause I need that to prove
you
need it.
You could put on like your LinkedIn on your resume. You can like, it's actually a physical badge too. So you can do all that cool stuff.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, good. I'm really excited to talk to you. And that leads me into the next thing we're going to talk about is how we met. So Jenna and I got a chance to meet about a month ago through a mutual friend for the first time. So I had heard about you through this mutual friend a bit. I didn't know a lot about you, but we actually got a chance to spend an evening together. It was awesome getting to know you. And here we are today on the podcast. So that's how we know each other.
Yes.
You're one of the guests that I actually know in the real world, because some of the people there's people I've interviewed that I know extremely well that I've never been in the same room with.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So some of the, okay. So like you're kind of the opposite. I don't really know you that well, but we actually have been in the same room together.
Yeah.
So it's the beauty of putting together a podcast where you talk to cool people. So I'm excited for this next one. Tradition on the show is that we give each other our first impressions of each other.
I'm very excited for this one.
Yeah. I'm going to be excited too. So because it's my show, I'm going to ask you to go first. So Jenna, what was your first impression of me?
Okay, so to the listeners at home, I met Jason at an event where people were getting awards for a completion of a course they took. And they had to pick someone in the room to speak to them on their behalf, give some sort of acknowledgement to. And several people in your group chose you. They could have chosen anyone in the room, and several people chose you, and it stood out to me. And I thought, there must be something about this guy that he is able to connect with people on a level that they are all looking to him to speak to them. And I thought that was a really nice, that spoke very highly of you and the way you were able to connect with people.
Wow. Thank you, Jenna. That's really nice of you. That is not what I was quite expecting. I'm a little dumbfounded, and that does not happen to me often. So thank you. That's very flattering. Yeah. That experience was interesting for me because there was one person in particular who asked for that from me, and I was not expecting that person to do it. You know, it's like being in school. You've got like, there's my ride or dies, or there's my boys, there's my girls.
Yeah.
And one of the people I was like, this person's probably going to ask for it. And like one person was like, I'm like, oh, but, I think it's also the room is the people also know that I'm not scared to get up and speak in public. So maybe I'm going to downplay all of your compliments and just like humble myself. I'm going to like just totally take away the power of your compliment.
No, you got to feel those compliments and let them sink in.
No, I hate compliments. It's one of the things that's outside my comfort zone.
Oh, okay. I get it.
Yeah, but no, thank you very much for the compliment. I'm working on receiving compliments. So thank you very much. So my first impression of you, as I'd mentioned, I'd heard a little bit about you and I'd heard that you were like a comedy person, and I love comedy people because one of my core aspects of my personality, which is the same as this mutual friend, is like play and fun. Like for me, things have got to be fun. I just don't even want to be a part of it.
Right.
So I'm always looking for fun and everything. So when I hear comedy, I'm like, oh, like anybody that I can laugh with, I can't think of anybody in my entire life that I have a genuine laugh with who I don't like. So
yeah.
I'm like, oh, I can't wait to meet Jenna. And then when I met you, I'm like, oh, she's all that and more like funny, but also like real. And watching you with a friend, I'm like, oh yeah, I totally see this. This is cool. I was happy for both of you. So my first impression of you is just, yeah, like super funny, super down to earth. And you seem, we haven't talked about this yet, but I think we will today. I know you also are a parent, so you seem to have a big heart is the energy that you put out.
Oh, that's very sweet. That is very kind. Thank you.
So that is my first impression of you.
Okay. I like it.
You'll receive as well.
I will receive. I'm also not great at receiving compliments, but I mean, I still like to get them, but it's difficult to sometimes process them and then take them.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah, totally. So real quick on, before we get into the meat of what we're going to talk about today, although we could just compliment each other all day if you want to.
That's fine by me. I mean, let's go.
You're like, let's bring it. You're like, why can't I find men who do this for me? Like, this
exactly. So what did you think of my hair?
Exactly. My wife would be like, you bastard. You did it on a phone conversation. You did it on your podcast, but you won't do it for me because I'm not a big words of affirmation person of giving. It's like, I don't like it, which means I should do more of it.
Yeah. Very important. It actually is very important.
It is. It is. It's something also I'm working on. Love you, Kirsten. If you're listening, you'll be listening, I'm sure. I'm working on it. We're all working on things. So let's get into it.
Okay.
So Jenna, first question I have for you is, what is something that you nerd out about?
Okay. So this will be surprising to a lot of people who don't know me because I am a born and bred New York City native. But I nerd out about the forest and nature, and I'm a huge country freak. So I'm one of those annoying people when you're driving in a car and you pass by like a pretty mountain. I'm like, everyone stop and look at the mountain. My father used to do that to us and it was so annoying, and I guess I've become him. But I really find peace in the forest. I hike a lot. I have a place upstate that I got for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about being in nature that puts the world in perspective for me. Some people have it about the ocean, standing in front of the ocean. Mm-hmm. But being in a forest and in nature makes me feel very small compared to the bigger picture. And I think it's great for perspective. And I find it has like healing medicinal effect also. So that's something I think that people would be surprised to hear, that I'm like a weird nature freak.
Hmm. That's interesting. I don't find that surprising at all. It's like were you born and raised in Manhattan?
Born and raised right in the concrete jungle. So
yeah.
To me, like, nature is so magical. It's something that should not be taken for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am like a huge nerd about it. If I get to walk like on a beautiful hike or have a mountain view, are you like a beach person or are you like a mountain person?
So we also have a place upstate in Sullivan County.
Okay.
And we have, it's on 10 acres. We own thousands of trees. So I love the space as well. Man, it's a good question. So Kirsten, my wife, is definitely a beach person. Like, that is her, that's her spot, the beach.
Yeah.
For sure. I love the beach as well, but I think if I had to choose one or the other, it would definitely be the woods.
Like, yeah.
Hiking the woods. I'm the same way. I'm from Minnesota originally. So I grew up in the suburbs. So I grew up around trees and lots of parks and things, and it's fine. But then I've been in New York it'll be 15 years here in March. So I consider myself a pretty big city slicker, but I very much appreciate going upstate and like the air and walking around and you see the animals and just like, our house is near, it's not on the river, but near the Delaware River. So there's this really cool hike. I love water. I'm a sailor. So I love just looking at water. It doesn't have to be the beach, but I really love looking at the Delaware River is beautiful because they don't allow motorized boats are like, you can't power boat on it. It's only like fishing troll motors. So I love that. I do love the ocean, but yeah, I think if I had to choose, it would definitely be like the woods, the mountains, and and if there's mountains, there's going to be water somewhere around.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised. I'm trying to think what that is eliciting in me. To be honest with you, I kind of expect it from somebody who's grown up in the city. Do you have friends who you grew up with who are like, I hate nature?
Well, what's really funny is all of my best friends from growing up, I'm still very close with everyone I went to high school with, and I live in Manhattan. They all kind of have moved out to Brooklyn, but so many of them have a place up by me. So it might be a thing. I mean, we might be it might be the forbidden thing to us city kids to be. But I do have some friends from New York City who I don't think would like ever want to be in nature. I spent the summers in the Berkshires. I went to camp. That was a huge part of my life. And that was really beautiful up there. I'm like 5 minutes from the Berkshires now.
With very nice.
State. So I think it's just kind of like in my head. It's just a piece of me. I just love it. Like my That's happy cool. place. Yeah.
How often do you go up there?
When it's warmer out, I go up a lot. We go up now. Oh my God, my son, who never wanted to go up because, you know, it's the country, has really gotten into it because he's actually getting his pilot's license up there, which as a Jewish mother, that's my biggest nightmare. literally
a whole podcast around that, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. Jewish moms is a whole other bag. But I go up as much as I can. You know, there's something in every season. The summer's obviously beautiful. You can hike, you could swim in the springs. In the fall, the leaves are turning. It's so nice to hike there. The winter, I went skiing for the first time, up there. Which was super fun. But it gets really cold and I'm not great with really cold. So I'm going to wait. I'll probably make it up there a couple times before the spring and then I'll spend a lot more time up there again.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. We go up almost every weekend of the summer. We actually have a pool.
Oh, so nice. It is,
yeah. Very it's cool. Nice. We put that in a few years ago and then, yeah, we try and go up there, as much as possible, but you know, life gets in the way. And for us, for me, like I am, you know, we'll probably talk a lot about this too, but for me, like I'm almost a complete extrovert, like a 98% extrovert on the Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
The one place, there's two places I like to be alone, a movie theater.
And a pool.
In our house in the Catskills. Like I used to go up there a lot more before we had our daughter and like work from there for the week. And you just wake up and I'm like, I have a friend of mine, my friend Brandon, he has this saying, he's like, I want a house with a naked porch. Like I can walk out.
By the way, I have a naked porch. So do we.
It's great. Naked porch. Like get up in the morning and you walk out buck naked and there's no way that anybody can ever see you.
Yeah.
Come up the driveway.
No, it's the best. You know, and people say to me all the time, because I sometimes will go up myself and they're like, wait, what do you mean? Aren't you scared that you're up there yourself? I'm like, it is the best thing ever. It's weird that I'm like actually so fine with it. I need to explore that.
Yeah. I mean, how you were created to be, it's great. So we're talking about things that are in our comfort zone, which are being naked on our porches. great visual for the audience.
Exactly. Like,
what is this podcast about? We're turning this off.
Link in bio to naked on the porch.
Well, for you, like I'm trying to keep it classy here. You do you. I'll link whatever you want. So Jenna, what's something that is inside of your comfort zone that might be outside of somebody else's? And I like to preface this with certain audience members. I don't want to hear something like, well, I'm comfortable doing stand-up comedy because we know you do that.
Right.
Something that's like a little, maybe not quite so expected.
Okay. So, well, I was going to say, but now it's not an appropriate answer. I was going to say, you know, you've seen my work and I'm really comfortable putting myself in uncomfortable situations, things that people would find awkward, I kind of welcome. I like love awkward situations. I don't create them except like obviously in work. But I've always been really comfortable on a stage with a microphone to strangers, pretending I'm a bouncer when I'm not. You know, in high school, I used to get us free taxi rides home from school because I would do these elaborate pranks on taxi drivers and talk us into free rides home. So I've always kind of been very outgoing like that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because we just talked about the forest. I am abnormally comfortable alone. And I think people that would surprise people because while like from a work perspective or even like in a party, like you could take me to a party where I know no one and leave me there and I'm like alone and I'm fine. Like it always kind of amazes me when people are like, can we go to the party together? Cause I'm like, well, we know everyone there. Like I'll just meet you there. So not like a date, but you know, like people who don't want to go to something alone is always kind of like, interesting to me because I'm very comfortable alone. I think that would kind of surprise people, maybe, given what I do and what my work persona is. I'm actually very kind of private. For as public as people think I am, I'm pretty private about mm-hmm. things that matter. But I don't know. That's what I was going to say I was comfortable doing. Mm-hmm. I know you said not, but
no, that's fine.
Dana falls into the umbrella. Something that's outside. Oh, are we doing that now?
We're doing that.
Okay. I've started.
Look at you. You're like, now I'm performing and I just need
to. I have hijacked your podcast.
You're like, I've got a list of questions and I'm just going to count through them. You shut up over there.
No, I'm going to let the moderator go ahead.
Have you ever done improv?
I have done improv. I used to do improv with UCB.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So I do improv at the Pit and like, that would be the worst improv scene ever of like, you're on a podcast and then you just take over the podcast and just like drown the host in the like nothingness, like the status that you're playing is like, it's my show and you're just going to sit here and do nothing.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, improv, you've seen my videos, right?
Yeah. I've seen some of your videos.
Okay. So that's definitely improv.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So anyway, go on with your question.
Yeah. So here's a question that might really surprise you. I hope you're sitting down for this one, but I'm actually really curious.
Oh, that's
I'm really curious. What's something that might be outside of your comfort zone that's inside of somebody else's?
Oh my God, I'm so shocked.
I'm so sorry to just pop this question on you with no advanced warning.
So something that's outside of my comfort zone is definitely asking for things from people is really, really difficult for me. I would rather, and I have done this, move furniture that I can't like will injure me than like ask someone for help. It's funny because I will literally do a favor for anybody and I love to do things for people and I do not feel comfortable asking for one thing. And I just had this conversation with my friend in sales because I was like, I would rather die than ask someone to buy something from me. Like I would rather just, even in my own work, like I'm always like, I'll do it for free. And then my agents are like, she'll take XYZ. Like, thank God for them. Cause I'm like, I'll just do it for free.
You're like the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Is that not the best show?
That's amazing.
Watch it.
You have a Susie Meyerson.
I have to have a Susie Meyerson. I always am like, I'll take nothing. And then my agents are like, actually, she'll take this. So that I think is surprising to people. I am not comfortable asking for things from people at all. I have a visceral reaction even talking about it.
Oh man.
Something that's I have to work on clearly.
Yeah. It's brutal.
It's like even, you know, even to like have my boyfriend walk my dog, like it maybe took 10 months for me to let
him. Oh man.
And he loves my dog. So that's, yeah.
Wow. Very cool. So you obviously are comfortable speaking and delivering speeches. Comedy is a speech.
Yeah.
Performing and being on radio and podcasts and such as giving a speech, which you do a lot of. So you have 5 minutes to deliver a speech to the world. What would you give your speech on and why?
This is really a tough one for me because I have two messages that I think are so important for the world. One is from a kind of worldly perspective about society and one is about like personal relationships. So I'm going to make each of them 2.5 minutes. How's that?
Perfect.
Okay. So the first one would be, you know, I lost my dad, 10 years ago. He was young. I was young. He had pancreatic cancer and I watched an incredibly healthy, very young guy who was very fit, not a smoker. I watched him die in 5 months. What seems like overnight. And in that moment, you really learn a lot about what is important in life and you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to the same place. We're all going to be buried in the same size grave. I'm not talking about what happens in your afterlife. I'm going to let everyone decide that for their own.
Sure.
But at the end of it, what's really important is who is there by your bedside and who shows up for you. And a lot of that has to do with what you put out there too in relationships. So that's one thing. And the other speech that I would give is, I would give my speech on social media being the destruction of our society,
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. A lot of the work I do, you've seen, like I did the no selfie zone. I did social networking in real life, terms and conditions. I think as people, we are so not conscious of how we are neglecting basic human responsibilities to ourselves, to each other. And we have just surrendered to this digital world. And I think it's really going to be the destruction next to the environment and next to maybe what happens in our government. I think it's causing problems with people, with relationships, with the way that we interact in the world. I think everyone needs to be a little more conscious of it. And that's a big platform for me. That's like a big thing that I'm constantly pitching projects having to do with that. Cause I think that that is really going to be the end of us, to be completely honest.
So what I'm hearing in all of that is that you're not going to be promoting this episode on your social media.
No, I'm kidding. Look, I use social media. I use social media, but I would say not a day goes by that I don't entertain taking it down completely.
Yeah.
And I am actually in contract with brands that I can't take down my social media.
Sure. And also you're not like a thing unless you're on social media as an entertainer.
Right.
Yeah. It's not an option for you not to be like, oh, I saw this really good comedian at the Comedy Cellar this evening. Her name was Jenna Kingsley. And then you look her up online. There's nothing there. You're like, okay,
she doesn't exist. Right.
Yeah. You're never getting your Netflix special if you don't exist.
Correct. And so even, you know, now, do you watch Black Mirror?
I love Black Mirror.
Okay. Did you see the episode where likes are currency?
Yeah, with Bryce Dallas Howard. It was amazing.
Yeah. So that to me is so scary because it's actually so realistic. You know, even when you go out to sell a project, they're like, how many followers does it have? You're like, well, it hasn't been created yet. I don't know. So everything is based, you know, even in business, like, sponsorship, it has to do with followers now. That's you know, it's very close to that Black Mirror episode. But what's scary to me is that kids are, you know, it's hard enough for adults, but kids are being raised in an environment where their self-worth is being based on likes and followers. And that's a little scary. That's frightening to me as a mom. And I mean, luckily my son has zero interest in social media, but I know most kids do. And that it's, you know, as you know, it's hard enough for an adult to sit back and watch social media sometimes. So it's,
absolutely.
Only imagine for kids who don't understand that a lot of what you're seeing is not real.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's an interesting message. I've never had anybody specifically bring it up in that way. So that's cool. My guess is it has continued to be heightened as your kids get older. It's a thing that becomes more real. Like my daughter's four, so she likes to watch Princess Sophie and Frozen 2 on her tablet. Like we don't worry about the social media stuff quite yet. But
you have a while. Hopefully. To say it. You have till she's like 8 or
9. I know. I know.
So
and then
young.
I know.
I know. Get ready.
Okay.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on talking to cool people.
Anyway, so Jenna, this is the part of the show where you get to share with us your journey to what led you to where we are today, you know, not necessarily just on the podcast, but like, what was your, you know, what was your path? What was your journey to where we, where you are and like what you're up to now?
So, you know, I was left in an orphanage as a child and my mom left me half a locket. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. That's Annie. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. Annie's story. That's not my story.
No, I remember that. I remember that. And then when you're like eight, you like climbed up a train, like a train rail. Yeah, I get it.
And then I moved in with Daddy Warbucks and everything was fine. Amazing. I grew up in the city. I'd say I was always funny. You know, I think people never described me as like, that was always how people described me, even as a kid. I was funny. And I continued to do theater. I did like a lot of musical theater and theater. I went to Lee Strasberg. I did all that. I went to NYU and I got my journalism degree because I loved writing, but I hate journalism, not other people's journalism, but for myself, I was not a good journalist because journalism is very much, you have to stay inside the lines and it's very format. And I'm the opposite of format or stay inside the lines. So that was a real struggle for me. And I was always way better at creative writing. I then got married when I was 11. I got married literally the year I graduated college, which is crazy.
Wait, hold on. You said 11. You mean 21?
No, not 11. I was 22. I was a year after I graduated, which is so young. It's so young. I think, you know, at 22, you do not know who you are.
Oh, my God.
I still don't know who I am.
Oh, my God. 22. Ugh. So, I would have been like.
Yeah. So I kind of had like a lot of reinventions of myself at the time. I think just trying to figure out who I was. I had some businesses. But then when my son was born, I went back and I got my master's degree in forensic psychology, believe it or not.
I believe it.
I wanted to be a criminal profiler. And I worked in that field for a while. And then I started writing again. I started writing under a pen name. I started a blog. I wrote under the pen name Darcy, thinking it was comedy. It was shorts. It was about dating. I had gotten divorced. It was about dating after being divorced as a single mom and under a pen name. And it kind of got this weird kind of viral cult following, my blog.
What does that mean?
So it was during the time of blogs and I suddenly had a lot of readers. Like I'd sent it to five people who sent it to five more. And before I knew it, it became like a thing. I had a big readership. But nobody knew who I was, which was the craziest part of the whole
thing.
But then I was approached by, you know, television production companies and stuff to turn it into a show, which is how I re-entered the entertainment business. And then I came out and I said I was not Darcy. I was, in fact, Jenna, because I had to start writing for other things. And then one of my agents suggested I do stand-up. And I was like, are you insane? That is so scary. I would never do it. So I took a class because he kind of convinced me. I took a class and at the end you perform at Caroline's with your class and it went really well. And I actually got picked up to be on my first real stand-up show at Caroline's. To someone who's my friend now, a great comedian, Robin Shaw, put me on her ladies' night show, which is all female comics. And from there, it just kind of took off. And I really was not expecting to be in the stand-up world at all. I never had like dreams of it. I just kind of ended up doing it. I love stand-up. I love watching stand-up. I always have. Like I grew up loving to watch like Ellen and Rita Rudner and all these female comics. And I started really performing. I got my first TV appearance. I started opening for Jackie Martling. Suddenly I was like traveling out of the city to perform places. And then I made my Starbucks video, thinking that it was, we were just going to shoot it for a sizzle. No one would see it. I put it on YouTube and then it went really viral. I woke up the next day and people were like, "You're on the news." I was like, "What?" And they're like, "The Starbucks thing." And I was like, "Wait, what?" So it became a huge thing that went super viral. And from there, I made the No Selfie Zone, which also went viral all over the news. Brands started to approach me. I created the social networking for Real Life for a brand. That is still going viral till this day. And you know, then I started to sell projects. I sold a television show to a network that actually went out of business, but it was in development for like a year and a half. You know, I've sold a ton of projects. I've done other branded stuff. I did something last year for Allswell Mattress, which is a Walmart brand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very fun. You know, that's my journey and I enjoy it. I love it when I'm working. It's great. It's a hard business, very hard. But I feel lucky to do what I love to do when I get to do it.
It's awesome. So when you say, so I'm not a TV person.
Okay.
At all. I'm not a TV person at all, nor do I play one on TV.
Okay.
Which is kind of meta. Yeah. So I don't know so I hear this all the time, like, oh, shows are in development. Can you walk myself and the audience through the process of that? Like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah. So in this case, there was a digital network. I'm not going to say which one it is. Just
Sure.
But there was a digital network who liked my work, bought the show. We had developed a show. I'm not going to say the title because it still belongs to me and in case I do something with it. But we sold a show. It had basically been gotten a green light. So we started to work on it. I wrote, you know, all the episodes. I ran them by legal. It was actually for a big network that still exists. This was their digital network. We had all our episodes mapped out and then the digital network actually went out of business.
Okay.
So, I mean, the main network is still there, but I think they just weren't ready yet for the digital component. So when that happens, your show doesn't get made. And that happens a lot. You know, often in this business, you could be put in development deals with networks. Nothing ever gets made. You can sell a show and you make the pilot, but it never even airs. There's a whole ton of things that can happen. So while people may not know you're working, you're actually working all the time. And it's just what people say. But one of the complicated things about today in my business, and I think in many people's business, is I used to, and I would say this, you know, Gary Vee, I'm sure. But one of the things I love about Gary Vee that's very accurate is he talks about, like, don't care if you have one follower or 1 million followers, just make it, do it. And so that's what I did for years. For years and years, I just made my own stuff and I made it for myself. I made what was good. I don't know if you are familiar with Brian Koppelman, but he wrote Billions. And if you're a writer,
oh yeah, of course,
you should follow him on Twitter because he is incredibly inspiring to writers. He talks about writing content for you and not other people. Cause I think when I started off, I was writing for myself. I had an idea like Darcy. I wrote it. I didn't care if I had readers. When I made the Starbucks video, I made it. I didn't think anyone would see it. Same thing with No Selfie Zone. Same thing. You know, as you get more successful, at least in my case, I started to feel the pressure of writing for other people and would they like it? Would they watch this video? Would people think it's funny? Will people think it's funny? So there's a weird dynamic that happens there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
And not to mention, we live in a world where there's so much content that I kind of now feel torn on what to put out there and not, which is not a great place to be, but I can admit that it's definitely something I probably need to work on.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all that, Jen. I learned a lot about that process because, like I said, I don't, that's not a world I've ever lived in. Maybe someday, I don't know. But yeah, it sounds very stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful. And I just think it's one of those things, like in this world, we have to kind of, anyone in entertainment or business, I'm sure in your business too, you have to kind of stay on top of what people are kind of, what's resonating with people.
Absolutely.
Even on your social media and your, you know, how you put your podcast out there.
Yes, which I can't wait for you to be my biggest promoter on social media.
I am now going to.
Like everybody, like, so Jenna, did you post today? Jenna, did you post today? Make sure your kids are posting too. But your kid that's interested, like, you need to share this over and over and over and over again. No human communication until you promote.
Exactly.
Very cool. So this is the part of the show where you get to play the host and ask me anything.
Okay.
So Jenna, what would you like to know about me, my perspectives on things, my past, my perceived future? Yeah. What would you like to ask me?
So what I'd like to ask you is, I know you're a life coach.
I actually don't, I've never,
oh,
I don't,
oh,
I don't,
oh, I'm sorry.
I am. I, no, I am.
Okay.
And I don't like that term for whatever reason. It's like, it's,
what do you prefer? Let's start there.
It's just, yeah, it's just a coach. And like, by the way, I want to be very clear. This is, you are not offending me at all. There's something about that term that's triggering to me. And I'll tell you what it, I know what it is. After spending a year and a lot of money and a lot of, blood, sweat, and tears, as you know, through our mutual friend who went through the program together, and like actually getting out and doing the work, you can go online and find life coaches who have no training that are like 22 years old.
Got it.
So I think it's like for me, it's it's not so much the term itself; it's just that it's so watered down at this point. I like when people are like, "Oh, what do you do?" I'm like, I call myself a success coach. What I actually really do with my clients, I call it, it's actually like more performance and leadership coaching is what I actually focus on, but you end up talking about everything. You know, coaches, like, you end up talking about everything. So yes, it is life coaching. I just don't, for me, that's not what I call myself, but I, yes, of course I am. It's just like the term I choose not to use.
Okay.
You did not offend me at all.
Okay. So what term do you use? Let's start there.
Let's use success coach.
Okay. Success coach. I like it.
And podcaster,
success coach and podcaster extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm.
My question for you is: when you are a success coach, I feel like you're doing a lot of work with people on their moving forward in their life, working on issues that they might be struggling with, issues that are holding them up. How, as a success coach, do you hold yourself accountable? And what work do you do to ensure that you are living the way that you encourage other people to live?
So I just want to set the record straight for the audience. This is not a planted question.
But it's a good one.
It's a good one, and it's not a planted question, but it is a great one. So, yes. So I think you'll appreciate this. So very first thing is make sure this is so perfect. I had this conversation with somebody today. I was at a coaching meeting with other coaches. When I run into people that are like, oh, coaching, like, I don't know, like I might be interested in coaching, and they're out looking for a coach because it's such a people business, right? Like you really have to have that connection with somebody. I always ask them to ask people two things to start before anything else. One, did you do any training? And not to say that you have to be trained, like you can certainly be it'd be like saying like, oh, every comedian has to go to like a comedy school. No, of course not. You can be the most amazing comedian out there. You might just be a super, like a great coach. So that question is not quite as important, but the second one to me means everything. Okay. Who's your coach? So for example, Joaquin Phoenix, we know has an acting coach and he's an Academy Award winning actor. Like most everybody who is always work at looking for excellence in their profession has somebody who's working with them alongside them. So answer number one is hire a coach.
Okay.
Answer number two is self-coach. So use the training that you've spent all this time and energy and money on that you bring to your other clients, use it for yourself. So for example, Like let's say that you're coaching somebody around integrity with time. So they have a time problem, right? They're like, oh, I'm never on time for things. I really want to be better on time. And then I'll and this is more of a fix it kind of like, I don't like where I'm at type of thing. I want to clarify something else you said in a little bit, but like, okay. Let's say like, I have trouble being on time. And I know that by being on time for things, it would actually open up a lot of opportunities for me. Mm-hmm. And you coach them around their relationship to time, how it goes for them. You might work on facilitated tools of them. Yeah. If you're terrible with time yourself, it's probably going to show up in your coaching.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, likely. I mean, it is totally possible that, it's like, I think you'll understand this. It's like liking it to a comedian who's like up there doing bits about things that are actually the things that comedian like hates about themselves. Like, I'm sure that happens, but I feel like that happens in almost every act I've ever seen, because it's the whole thing, like truth and comedy.
Okay. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Truth and comedy. Like, oh, like the reason, you know, the things that, like self-deprecating comedians is because they're actually like hard on themselves. So same thing there. And it's not to say that your coach is not another fellow human being struggling with things all the time. And yes, as when you have clients, they will bring things that are very triggering for you and that may not be in your wheelhouse of expertise. And this is where the training comes into play and having a coach comes into play. Part of the training that I've been through is you learn how to stand with your clients and create a safe space regardless of what they're bringing to you. So we have a saying, it's called being in their tissue box. It just means, like, let's say that Jenna, you're a client of mine and I'm coaching you and you're bringing something to me around parenting. And it's actually something that's very triggering to me in my parenting. It's like being there and creating that space for you where I'm not inserting my stuff into your space. Of like, oh yeah, you know what? Like, I find parenting really difficult too. And here's why. Have you ever had this happen to you? And like getting into each other, like getting into like the weeds of like, and agreeing with your story. It doesn't mean that I don't have those feelings, but it's like, like being able to stand for that. So like the training is important there. And then at the beginning, you mentioned you're working on things when maybe it's not going well in their life. That is sometimes what it is. But a lot of things I work with my clients are like, their lives are amazing. Okay. And they view coaching as like a accelerator. Like I work with really two types of people. I call them either like inspired leaders. So, and we're all leaders in our life in some way, like parents, spouses, you know, if you're a sibling or you're a child, I mean, we're all children, but if our parents are still alive, like you're a leader in some way, shape or form. And then in your business, whether you work for somebody or not, you are leading something somewhere almost all the time. So I work with inspired leaders, and that means like, hey, like I like what I'm doing. I like where my career is going. I like the way it's going at home. And I realize that there's always room to improve. Or uninspired leaders, which would be somebody who's like, I'm actually doing the things, but I'm uninspired by it.
Okay.
So yeah. So all that to say, there are a lot of times when people bring like, hey, like it's not really working for me, but I have clients, they're killing it.
Right.
They're killing the game. And like, I'll give you the perfect example of somebody that like Tom Brady. And no, I'm not a Patriots fan at all. Not actually a huge Tom Brady fan.
Okay.
But I don't know this for a fact, but I've heard, like, I think Tom Brady has like six coaches, right? So he's got a nutrition coach. He's got a strength and conditioning coach. He's got a mindset coach. He's got a like quarterbacks coach, which is just teaching, you know, like keeping his, you know, like technique. He's probably got a life coach and he's got a business coach. Tom Brady seems to kind of kill it in almost every area of his life. It seems that way. And he knows that investing in people that like, he can't do it alone. So like a lot of my clients are just like, hey, I can't accelerate or I can't grow as quickly alone as I can with a coach. And that coach just happens to be me for these clients. So right. Sometimes it's a fix, but it's not always a fix. A lot of times like, hey, I just got promoted. Now I want to work on my leadership skills, not because I'm broken or I need to fix anything, but because I actually want to create even more for my life than I ever thought possible.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think it's a really interesting field. I have another friend who she's getting certified. I don't know the language, but she's really someone great. And I've been her practice, her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I got to tell you something, like there was a time when I spoke to her, I had writer's block and it got me to the paper. It got me to my keyboards. I see totally. How it could actually be such a beneficial tool to people to have someone else holding them accountable. And I'm fascinated by it. And obviously you must be a really good one since all those people want you to acknowledge them.
And now we are back to the acknowledgement again. I don't know whether I'm good or not. I feel like my clients like me and we do some good work together. I mean, but I'm always improving. Yeah. And it's like the thing to wrap on this question, and thank you. This is a really good question. I like, obviously love talking about this.
Yeah.
The thing that one of the premises in coaching is like, Jenna only gets to walk around through Jenna's eyes, ears, and brain and heart.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason only does that. And guess what? Jenna's got blind spots and Jason has blind spots. And let's say that we work together. It's highly unlikely that your blind spots are my blind spots. So I actually can say like, hey, Jenna, it sounds like, you know, you've got a story in your head about something. Sometimes it's around circumstances. Sometimes it's factual, but a lot of times it's just stories and judgments and opinions and feelings. I can say to you as my client, like, hey, Jenna, it sounds like you've got a story around writer's block and what it is about writing that gives you this block. Like, have you considered this? Which I know for me, when my coach does that for me, I'm like, I have not considered that. You know why? Because I can only think in my own brain and my brain doesn't work that way. So there's also like this, a really amazing thing that you get another human being to stand for you and like reflect to you and offer things that aren't right or wrong. They're just like, hey, like, here's how it feels to me over here as not inside of your body and not inside of your mind. How does that land for you? And it may be that they're like, well, actually, no, that's not it. But a lot of times people are like, I've never thought of it that way. Or like, oh, I didn't realize that I actually did it. I'll just wrap this little section with an example. One of the things as a coach you also get trained to do is like if you're on a Zoom meeting or even on the phone, like you're always looking for nuances in voice. And I think for like actress and comedy, like you're doing this, if you're doing like sketch comedy or improv, you know, this is an improver. You're always looking for your partners, like their body and their nuances and their voice, so you can play off of those things. Mm-hmm. So for example, you hear somebody, they're talking about how excited they are about something, but the feeling you're getting from them is not excitement.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hey, Jenna, like you're telling me you're really excited about this new opportunity, but from over here, the energy does not feel like excitement. It's likely that I'm picking up on something that's worth exploring.
Right. 100%. Yeah. No, it's so interesting.
Yeah. Sure.
I think
it is a fascinating field. And coming from a psychology background too, I'm sure that you have all sorts of additional opinions, but also like ways that you look at it that I wouldn't see it because you obviously have that educational background as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always so fascinated by human behavior, and a lot of even what I do in like comedy is driven, you know, my videos is driven by human behavior. I do a lot of observational humor. And a lot of my work is observations of how humans are behaving in this world that we live in. So it's kind of, you know, it all goes together. One is comedy, one is not. But I find the entire, I think what people, how people interact with others, how people make decisions. I mean, this will definitely get into our next area that we're going to be talking about. But
what do you mean? What are you talking about? This is just word. What do you mean?
You know what I assume is.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. You never know what's going to happen here on Talking to Cool People.
That's right. You never know. Except you probably know if you've listened to the show because it's the same questions every time, which is designed that way. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the question. That was, I love talking about that. And it's just my perspective too. I'm not saying that I'm right about this. This is just the way I see it. And I'm sure there's other coaches that would say, well, that's not how I see it. And there's a ton of really amazing coaches that are like, I'm a life coach. I'm like, cool for you. Like, I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends that I've gone through the program with, or I'm friends with, they're like, hey, I'm a life coach. I'm like, that's amazing for you. It goes back to like, it doesn't sit with me. Right. And if you don't like the title somebody gives you, it's your right to say like, oh yeah, I actually prefer to be called this, and it's my business, so I can call myself whatever I want. How about that?
Right. Yeah, I love it. I definitely.
Yeah. Cool. So I've got a question for you that's going to come out of nowhere. Right now. let's geek out on improv for a minute. We're now moving into the second beat part of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we've already established kind of like who we are to each other and where we are, and now let's up the game a little bit. As to use UCB terms, I don't play at UCB, but we're going to up the game.
Okay, perfect.
Jenna, what are you passionate about?
So one of the things that I feel I'm passionate about, which I think has, I've never not been a good person. I hope I've always been a good person, but I've become passionate about living with intention. Making choices that kind of enhance my relationships with people. You know, one of the things that I have realized as I get older is what your relationships are a choice. You know, I'm lucky that all of my best friends are friends since I'm little. But one of the reasons that we're still friends is we all work hard to maintain those friendships. I mean, I'm lucky that there are good friendships, but I try to carry that into other areas of my life now. Just being a good person, I hope that I can be the best person that I could be to others in all sorts of relationships. And that's kind mm-hmm. of become a passion of mine, actually. I find it exciting to work on the choices that I'm making, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So, what is the thing that you're most proud of?
So this is another one where I have a couple of answers, but I'm just going to mm-hmm. say, I am proud of the man that my son is turning out to be. Mm-hmm. You know, when your kids are little, you're just trying to basically get them to the next stage. I mean, you know, it's like, make sure everything's okay. And then as they get to a certain age where you're not with them as much, you hope that they are making decisions that you would be proud of. Mm-hmm. And I am fortunate enough that I have gotten to see my son make some decisions that I am, when I'm not around, because he's a teenager. So he's mm-hmm. kind of does a lot of stuff on his own. And I am actually really proud. I can say, everyone's always like, oh, I'm so proud of my kids' gymnastics or whatever. I'm actually really proud of the person that he is becoming. Mm-hmm. That is something I'm really proud of. I'm also proud of my work, the fact that it's still getting shared. You know, some projects I made years ago and people are still sharing it. One of my videos was recently written about in a book. I didn't even know that.
That's amazing.
Someone wrote to me on Instagram about it and they're like, oh, I read about you in this book. And I was like, what book? So the fact that my stuff is being used as a cultural reference that will hopefully live on long before I do is kind of exciting.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Is the book something, what's the book about? Do you know?
So the book was, it's about recruiting, like network recruiter. You know what? I should know. I'm going to read it.
I was about to say it's written by an author. The author's name is Darcy. And they mentioned this woman, Jenna Kingsley, and they kept mentioning her over and over again. It's an amazing book.
No, it's for recruiters. It's for recruiters. And I am so honored that I'm used as a reference in this book. But what's really funny is I guess my stuff is being used in law classes. My terms and conditions video is being used for first year law students.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is cool. My social networking is shared a lot on LinkedIn and it's like at a lot of business conferences about how we interact with people and make relationships with strangers. So all that stuff is really cool to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Very nice. So her
book is Robot Proof Recruiter and it's Katrina Collier. That's
really random that you would end up in somebody's book. And she didn't reach out to you or ask?
She reached out to me. There's like two pages dedicated to me, which is, I was so honored. I was like, this is like crazy. I mean, being in a book makes it very official.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is that something that's completely allowed in the industry? Is if you find somebody you like and they have content, you can just write about them in a book without actually.
So if you're going to, by the way, and she's based out of the UK, which is even cooler.
Whoa. That's awesome.
So if you're going to use my videos for profit in any way, like content, you have to get permission from me or you
sure.
have to pay to kind of license them if you're going to be on television. But you can write about someone in a book and cite their work and stuff. And it was all very flattering, so I don't care.
That's super cool. No, it's great. Yeah.
If it wasn't, no.
Yeah. Like if J.K. Rowling wanted to put you in her next book.
You know what?
As a character.
I'd be honored. I'd be honored. Yeah, I would just, to be honest, just the recognition is kind of huge. I'm psyched about that.
Yeah, that is really cool. I'm going to totally go off topic here for a minute before I ask you a bit of a vulnerable question. Yeah. Where did the name Darcy come from? It just popped up for me.
Darcy, for me, it was called Darcy Dates. So it was kind of like rhymey, timey, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. But Darcy kind of is a name that came to me when I had to sum up who I thought my character was. Because I want to say that I am kind of I'm a lot of fun, if I do say so myself.
I think so too.
I'm very light. I'm very airy. I'm not, you know, I don't take myself too seriously. Darcy just sounded like the perfect name for it.
I love it.
For no reason other than it's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah. I was figuring it was either going to be I'm a writer and it sounded cool, or I'm a big Pride and Prejudice fan. I wasn't sure which one.
No, Darcy sounded like the name of someone who is friendly and doesn't take themselves so seriously, and kind of kooky. And that's basically what my character is, or that's who I am, I think.
It's like the more modern version of Kathy, the comic strip.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That totally makes sense to me. I love it. I love it. So next question for you, and I'm really interested to hear about this just because of the kind of work you do, but what's something that you were afraid might actually be true about you?
I think something I'm afraid might actually be true about me is I self-sabotage things. Mm. I have heard that before, and I think that I maybe sometimes do that out of fear, and that could be true. And I'm afraid it's true. I'm afraid it's true. It might be true. And I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
I want to offer something up to you.
Yeah.
That you are a human being.
Yeah.
And this is what human beings do. And I have a second part of the question, which is perfect because you actually don't know what's coming next.
Okay, perfect. I'm excited.
Yeah. What do you do to compensate for that fear?
Well, I'm incredibly self-deprecating. And I think that's one of my biggest coping mechanisms, is that I am able to make fun of everything, which is a talent, but it's probably also something I need to work on, because sometimes I should speak a little more seriously about things that I feel seriously about.
Mm. So you use humor as a mask?
I use humor as a mask for sure. When I am hurt by something, I have to laugh about it, because I've always felt that if I didn't laugh, I would just die. So for me, I have been through some very difficult things in my life for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have gotten through them if I wasn't able to seriously have a good laugh about it. There's probably a better way to do it sometimes and speak honestly about how I feel about something.
Yeah. Have you written any material or like any jokes or any donated performing that's really comes from pure grief? Cause I know that's a thing that some comedians will just like take the darkest parts of their lives and actually turn it into like really funny material.
Yeah. You know, I think I do that with my friends. I definitely do that with my friends. I think my friends are amazed that I'm able to do that. Publicly, there hasn't been any topics that the topics that hurt me the most, I never want to give public time to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
So, I think in Darcy, I did that to an extent. But the things that have crushed me the hardest, I definitely have been able to joke about with my friends. Publicly, they're probably topics that I wanted to keep private, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, absolutely.
Yeah. But absolutely. Yes, I know that even Louis C.K. says the best work came when he started doing that. So maybe yet to come for me.
Yeah. Well, that just on the comedy topic, the whole thing with Louis C.K. and the to women, I'm like, who's surprised by this? Have you ever seen any of his stand-up? That topic is about a quarter of his material. It's
by
not
the
surprising.
Way, I know. It's funny. If you know, look, I love Louis C.K.'s work. He's one
brilliant.
of biggest inspirations. I think, you know, him and Dave Chappelle are my two number one favorites.
Me too.
Comics. Brilliant, brilliant.
Dave Chappelle is unreal.
David Chappelle is, you know, I got to perform with Charlie Murphy. I was on his show and his podcast. And he was amazing.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace. He's amazing. But Dave Chappelle is brilliant on a whole other level. First of all, he's so smart. Sometimes you don't even know if it's like stand-up or he's just a storyteller.
Oh,
I die. Did you see his most recent special?
I've seen them all. I was
like crying. Like I was like bent over crying.
Can we geek out about this stuff for a couple minutes?
Yeah, please.
Let's do it. So the Chappelle show. So I'm 42. So the Chappelle show for me was like mid 20s, like ideal time, right? Like out of college. Just out of college or like maybe a few years out of college. The two skits that immediately come to mind for me with Charlie Murphy on the Chappelle show is, first of all, The Real Real World. Remember that episode?
Okay. So you're not going to believe what I have to say to you, but
wait, were you in that episode? Were
no,
you in that scene?
I wasn't. I was late to watching the actual Dave Chappelle show.
Oh my God.
I know. So I was familiar with his stand-up and I was not, I only watched his show, believe it or not, recently. I have seen The Real Real World. It's hilarious.
Oh my God. Yep. Do you remember what character Charlie Murphy plays in The Real Real World?
Was he the guy that got in bed with the girl? Well, who was
yes.
he?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I forget his name. Natron is the name of Dave Chappelle, but he's the guy who's like, for those who are listening, there's The Real Real World. The premise of the scene, of the skit, if you haven't seen it, is it's basically like The Real World, like the show on MTV, except it's all like African-Americans who are like either like convicts or like just like total like, you know, like partying and all that stuff. And then this guy, Chad, walks in. He's like the whitest dude ever. And he's like, hi, everybody, I'm Chad. And then he ends up rooming with Charlie Murphy's character. And Charlie Murphy ends up having sex with his girlfriend. His girlfriend comes to visit from college. And he's like, the thing I remember, the line's so good. He's like, what are you talking about? I didn't have sex with Katie. And then he's like, correction, I had sex with Katie. And then it's just like the white kid, Chad, his face just falls. Cause he's like, he's forced to live in this house with like a bunch of people. He's like, I have no idea what's going on right now.
That's so amazing.
I'm going to go watch that. It's one of my favorite skits. And the second thing is what I personally, and I have a personal affinity for this being from Minnesota, this scene where they meet Prince and the new Power Generation at the club and go back to Prince's house and play basketball. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I just watched that too. Amazing.
Where Charlie Murphy's
so
like one of his
good.
Bouncers. Oh. And then Chappelle plays Prince. He's like, does anybody want some pancakes?
It's really, he's so brilliant. It's like not even
brilliant.
Other people.
And then to geek out for a minute on Chappelle, like I love all this stuff. The kicked her in the blank. Incredible.
I didn't. You know,
In his stand-up.
When he ties in the stovetop stuffing.
I'm so good at this. I'm so good at comedy by now. I can drop this line at the beginning of it and the crowd's dying because it's like super crude. And then you forget about it, right? Because like this 10-minute story about being a kid.
Can I say the line? Will you say the line.
You're good.
The line, everybody, has kicked her right in the pussy. I have no problem saying that line. But it's brilliant. And I love that he tied it into the stovetop story.
That's incredible.
I know. It's brilliant. Yeah. And I also love about his most recent special is that he touched on all of these taboo topics. And the media ended up doing exactly what he said they were going to do. He led his special by saying, you guys are the critics. You guys are going to say, and they did exactly what he said. And he set them up. I was like, you guys, he pulled the biggest prank on you out of anybody. He got everyone to write about this stuff.
It's brilliant. I love it.
God, was it
good. Oh, it's so good. And then the other thing that I love is the Draymond Green bit. So good. Do you remember that? He's talking about, he's talking about like the blackest name possible.
I don't remember that.
Oh, it's so good. So Draymond Green is a basketball player, plays for the Golden State Warriors. And he's talking about, he leads it off. So his bit is about, and I forget her name now. It's the woman who, I think either worked for the NAACP or worked for some sort of equity rights, like racial rights thing.
Okay.
Rachel Tozer, I believe is her name. And she was claiming to be black, but she actually wasn't.
Yeah.
So he does a whole bit on this. And then he talks about if you're going to be black, don't pick a name like Rachel Dozer.
Wait, was this in the most recent special?
It was in the second to most recent one.
Okay. I'm going to have to go back.
I'll go watch it. But I'll drop a little bit of the line. I won't give the whole thing away, but he's basically the whole premise is if you're going to be black, go full black. And then he proceeds to give a bunch of completely stereotypical things that she should do to be black. And then he basically drops the line Draymond Green, and then he ends the bit with he's like that name is so black. When you're on Airbnb and you type that in, it just logs you right out. So bad, so good.
So bad, but so good.
So good.
So good. You know, this is the biggest problem also with comedy today is you can't say anything.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want, but everything is a whole other level. Everyone's offended. So I stopped doing stand-up about 2 years ago. Mm. I made a conscious decision to stop. Just the lifestyle wasn't for me. I love doing it. If I could do it once a month, that would be great, but that wasn't what it was. So, I wonder now what I could have said. You know, I looked at a script that I wrote a couple of years ago that I would never submit now, ever.
Yeah.
So it's just a really interesting world. But what I loved is he just didn't give a fuck. He just did it.
Yeah. He just did it. Yeah. Brilliant. So, yeah. Brilliant. Truth in comedy.
Truth in comedy. Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. So we're going to wrap up here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I have a few more questions for you, which will be shocking to you, I'm sure. So, Jenna, what's your general philosophy in life? Another way I like to phrase this is what's your operating system or what's your operating procedures that you go through life with?
So I am, my sister made a speech at something, a birthday, a wedding. I don't know what it was, but she described it perfectly. She said she's always been the type of person who, before she gets into a pool, will stand by the shallow end, stick her foot in for 20 minutes, decide if she's going to get in. I would just come running out of the house and dive into the deep end.
I'm already annoyed with your sister.
No, she's the best. Let's just put it out there.
I'm kidding.
We were so different in that way. Yeah. She's you would just run out of the house and not look if there was water in the pool and just jump into the deep end.
Yeah.
So I would say that's always kind of been the way I lived. I never lived, my mom always talks about when I took ballet as a kid, all the girls were lined up on the bar and I was doing my own dance in the corner. And my mom used to be like, oh my God, what's wrong with this girl? But now it all makes sense. I live my life. I don't live according to the rules of other people. Obviously, I live by society's rules. I am a presentable person. I respect boundaries. I'm raising a child and like I said earlier, I'm proud of the man that he's turned out to be, but mm-hmm. I don't really live caring about, do I have this check? I'm supposed to have this now check. I have never lived by check boxes. I will never live by check boxes. I really live from my gut, how I feel, how people make me feel, how situations make me feel. And I don't know. It's been, so far so good. I'm probably a lot less impulsive than I used to be, which is good. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. And now I try to look at the end result before I make a decision. But in general, my philosophy on life is you get one and you have to live it. And you can't live it for other people. You have to dig deep and find what makes you happy and stick to that.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. So,
I just also want to add to this. I have people who will tell me, I was married. They're like, you have to get married again, do this. And I'm like, why?
Yes, you have to. You have no other choice.
And if I say, I'm not sure that that's what I want, or I'm not sure I want this, or by the way, I'm not saying I wouldn't get married again because I would, but I'm just saying I don't feel I have to. I think everyone so concerned with feeling they have to do something. And I want to do things because I want to, and it feels mm-hmm. right. I always say, like, to me, the best relationship is like Kurt and Goldie Hawn. They have kids from their first marriage, and they have been together forever. They never got married, but they choose to be together every day. And when you have yeah. to choose to stay together, I think you have to be the best version of you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's something to think about.
Yeah, there's a cool saying that I learned. I don't remember who told me this. Like a big, you know, you hear like a case of the shoulds, or you're shoulding all over yourself.
What
I should
what
do this?
It? Oh that's, yeah,
You're shoulding yes. all over yourself.
Yes.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, I love it. Awesome. So, this as we start to wrap up.
Yeah,
and we don't have to wrap up at this minute, but this is where I like to come back to you and ask you if there's anything that's popped into mind, anything else you want to share with myself, with the audience at this point, either things that you shared that you wanted to go back and recap or follow up on, or something that I said that struck you, or, you know, maybe you just got some improv in you, we just want to do a quick improv scene. Anything that you'd like to do to share back with the audience on anything we've talked about today?
No, I feel that I've given the audience everything I have. They know too much about me now.
You've left it all on the stage.
I think there's nothing I want to share. If anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. No, okay. I think we've shared. Okay. I don't know. Is there anything you'd like to share?
Oh, and we're doing that now. no, I'm good. I do. You know, this podcast is going to do 100 episodes this year. So between those 100 episodes, I will be sharing a lot. Yes.
That is awesome. Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
Lots of content because it's so much fun and I love talking to cool people.
Yeah.
So, good segue into the next question I have for you is, where can the audience find you when they want to connect with you?
So the audience can follow me on Instagram, Jenna Kingsley, 1N, Jenna Kingsley. You could also watch my videos on YouTube. Just type in Jenna Kingsley to find out how crazy I really am. Oh, wait. And I have a website, jennakingsley.com. I guess it's all.
Oh, that thing. The website. That thing. Yeah, that thing. Yeah.
I forget I have that. Yeah, I have that too. You can go check it out. There's links
She's
to
got
stuff.
A website.
There's
awesome.
Email me and stalk me and show up at my door.
Yeah.
Don't do
so you're going to provide your home address, your address up in the Catskills.
Exactly.
Yeah. Perfect. Where you're going to be having dinner tonight for Valentine's Day. Like just show up, just say hello.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just do a live stream and you could just show up.
Ooh, that's cool. I did an Instagram live this morning. It was really fun.
Oh, those scare me. Talk about things that scare me. That scares me.
Oh my God. That's so interesting because you literally get on stages and perform.
There's something about me with social media. I don't like to be so... I don't know. I'll explore it next time we speak, Jason.
Yeah, exactly. Jenna, that is so ironic. You're like, you can find me on Instagram.
But you won't see anything there.
You're like, you can find me there and it'll be a blank page of nothingness.
Just, I'm dead inside.
You'll be like, this is the most uninspired comedian's Instagram feed I've ever seen.
I do a lot of like little series on my Instagram. What I try to do on my Instagram real quick is I try to do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. So rather than pretend my life is perfect, I like to point out how unperfect it is. And I do like a whole thing, Divorce is Forever. A lot of stories about how my ex-husband, even though we're divorced, is constantly around. You could actually see that. You should watch that highlight on my highlight.
I definitely want to.
But yeah. Anyway,
that's disappointing because I was hoping to go to your Instagram and just see all the delicious meals you've eaten over the last year.
I post food porn. No food pictures, except I did post once. I caught my oven on fire, so I posted that. I also made a chicken for like 9 hours and it looked beautiful on the outside when I cut it to serve it. It was raw on the inside. So I posted that. That's the kind of stuff you're going to see from me, Jason, and everyone else.
Oh, yeah. This is great. I'm sorry. I just have to call you out. You're like, yeah, I try to make it real. The very first image is you on the top of an aspen, like skiing with two other women, like looking like three models. I'm like, are you serious right now?
That is a real capture. And I always post mountain stuff. So I was skiing, if you scroll, and that's my best friend. And I was away.
Yeah, I know. It's like so funny. You're like, I just like to make it funny and real. And I'm like, it's you and Aspen.
So here's the thing. This is interesting. My pictures, I try to post. I post a lot of nature pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's more my stories. I use my stories more.
Oh, I like, sorry, I'm looking at one more before we wrap up here. I like the ads, the Allswell. That's super cool.
Where, yeah, that was.
Oh, you're driving on Soho. That's fun. That's really fun.
Yeah, so that was a video I got in bed with New Yorkers.
Very cool. Eating a pizza on a mattress in the back of a really cool retro pickup truck. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And sorry, I had to see the other one here in Barcelona of some underwear ad. Okay, I'm gonna stop scrolling your Instagram feed right now.
You can stalk me later.
I will stalk you later. Well, I'll get your address later, so it'll be a whole different thing.
Okay.
All right, Jenna. So we're going to wrap up for today, and we're going to wrap up
so great
with you dropping for us some words of wisdom that, no pun intended and very ironic, should fit on an Instagram post, and not the words of the Instagram post, but the art or the picture of an Instagram post. So what would the words of wisdom you'd like to leave us with be?
I'm going to, for my post-it note, I am going to quote the great Sex and the City. I don't know if you're a watcher of it.
I've watched all of it, yes. I mean, it's got Donald Trump in it. It's amazing.
So I am a huge Sex and the City fan, and I don't know if you remember the episode where he broke up with her on a post-it. And all.
Yes, I do.
I'm sorry, I can't, don't hate me. I think that's what my post, I think that's, that's the note that I would leave.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's the wisdom I would leave. I'm sorry.
How is that words of wisdom?
Well, if you think about it, it's actually very fitting for someone who's a sabotager.
Okay. No, I mean, that does make sense. So like, okay, so.
Words of wisdom.
I get it.
Here's my words of wisdom. And it's my constant quote. I'm also a huge Oprah fan. And mm-hmm. She always talks about this Maya Angelou quote, which is, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time. And
yeah,
that,
so good.
To me, is the best piece of advice you can take. People tell you people show you who they are very, very soon after you meet them. And it amazes me. I deal with this with my friends all the time. Mm-hmm. My girlfriends are like, I can't believe this happened. I'm like... He literally showed you this like after the first season. What are you talking about? So I think that is something that I would tell people.
I actually like them both.
But I for me, and to fit in my brand of who I am, I'm going with, I'm sorry, I can't. Okay? I'm sticking to it.
No, I will use that to promote your episode. That's fantastic. Well, Jenna, I want to thank you again for being on. It was an absolute pleasure to get to know you. I know you quite a bit better now, and you know me quite a bit better now. We are close to best friends. We'll continue to get to know each other. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other in person soon, since you're in New York City. I'm in New York City. We have some mutual friends. And I want to wish you a very happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you and yours.
Thank you very much.
I will speak to you soon, Jason.
Yes, Jenna, you too.
Okay, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out, or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.